Something odd took place this past week at the United Nations. Rather than apologize for America's might and stability, an American president celebrated and, yeah, even bragged about it. Rather than reaching out and embracing enemies of America, an American president went after them. Rather than the leader of Israel expressing sadness for America's reluctance to be a leader she's destined to be, the leader of Israel praised the American president for the stand at the UN that was taken. Here to share his analysis of President Trump's speech to the UN General Assembly and his chairing of a meeting of the UN Security Council, which probably caused the heads of Never Trumpers to do a complete 360, is CNN political commentator and member of the Trump 2020 Reelect Advisory Committee, Steve Cortes. How are you today, Steve?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
And you can follow Steve on Twitter at CortesSteve and keep on top of his views. And, of course, you see him on a regular basis on CNN. Quite the difference between a now and then as far as a president of the UN, this past week, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, it sure was. And obviously there was so much other news going on in Washington, D.C., that I think that this news got subsumed to some degree. But I think it was really a remarkable event. I think, you know, first of all, he gave, in my mind, a magnificent speech and really a very towering, grand speech about America's strategy for the world. It really followed, I think, on the speech he gave in his inaugural in Warsaw, perhaps in Riyadh, where he talks about principled realism was the term he used, where we're going to be we're going to default to non-interventionism. We're not going to engage in the nation building that the last two administrations engaged in. And we're going to finally assert America's interests. And that comes not just with enemies, but even with friends in our alliances, whether they're military or economic arrangements, that we're going to demand fairness, reciprocity in all of those arrangements, whether it's trade with China or whether it's military alliances with NATO. America is going to come first in our policy. It doesn't mean America alone, but it does mean America first. And he made that case forcefully to the UN, to a group that didn't necessarily want to hear it, to a group that I think was a bit disrespectful to him. But I also think that's okay. And I, to be honest, I'm not sure they really truly laughed at him the way the media tried to portray it. But if they did, you know, fine. I would wear that actually as a badge of honor. If a bunch of bureaucrats and globalist elites at the United Nations don't like the way he is reasserting American sovereignty, I say, fine, we'll welcome that.
He's just as simple as they're looking at President Trump and thinking, this isn't how an American president is supposed to behave at the UN. You're second class in this building.
Right. Well, you know how he's behaving. I think you have to go back to Ronald Reagan to find an American president who spoke to the international community this way. In particular, when I say international community, I really mean the elites, the Davos and UN diplomatic crowd, the connected cronies who believe that they should. It's almost like central planning on economy. In terms of international affairs, they believe that they know better and that the world that they construct and the multilateral accords that they construct are better for regular working people in America and around the world than the people deciding for themselves what should be in their interest. And what we've seen globally, not just in the U.S., is an electoral revolt against that. We saw it in Brexit. We've seen it in Italy. And we certainly saw it here in the United States in 2016, where the people say, no, sovereignty matters. We can control our borders. That's not racist. It's not xenophobic. We can assert our interests first, just as every country should assert their interests first. And it's better for our security and better for our prosperity. And so it might not be the most polite policy. It might not be something that they want to hear in the salons, again, you know, of Manhattan, where a lot of these diplomats commiserate. But it's something that's important for American workers, and it's one of the reasons that Donald Trump won in 2016.
So Steve Cortes, who is the CNN political commentator, member of the Trump 2020 Reelect Advisory Committee, at Cortes Steve on Twitter, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Should the leaders of Iran give a call to Kim Jong-un and ask for advice on what to do when you're placed in Donald Trump's crosshairs?
That's an interesting idea. Perhaps they should, because Kim Jong-un seems to be, you know, for a guy with a miserable track record, seems to be making the right moves now toward rapprochement with South Korea. A lot of good things going on there. A lot of talk about finally, formally ending the Korean War. They're going to apply together for an Olympic Games coming up. I believe it's in the 2030s. So some really finally, after decades, you know, of just an incredibly icy relationship between North and South Korea and between North Korea and the United States, we're seeing some signs of a thaw. And why did they come about? They came about because of the strength of Donald Trump, because he used maximum pressure diplomatically, economically, most of all, to isolate that regime, mainly via China. Trump does this in many ways. He realizes that the United States has a strong hand that it can play when it needs to, Not that we're a bully, but when we need to, we have the strong hand as the world's economic and military superpower. So this is a perfect example. Because China needs us so badly on trade, he used that leverage to say, if we're going to play ball with you on trade, you need to get tougher on North Korea economically, isolate that regime, put pressure on them so that they come to the table and act reasonably, stop shooting missiles into the Pacific, for example, which they have stopped doing since then. So, you know, these are the very real-world, realpolitik ways in which Trump, the negotiator-in-chief, you know, the art of the deal, is getting to deals that are going to, I think, ultimately be great for world peace. And to bring it back to your question about Iran, I think the exact same is going on. You know, Iran, that regime has really abused its own people for decades. The regime is now starting to suffer from the economic pressure that we are exerting because we've gotten tough, for instance, with European companies and said to them, if you want to do business in the United States, which they all do, you can't do business in Iran. That's the right way to put pressure on that tyrannical, theocratic regime in Tehran so that the people of Iran put pressure on them internally to reform. And I think we're already seeing some results. I think we're going to see a lot more in the future.
I think it's a safe thing to say, too, that if there was a civilian uprising again in Iran, the response of this president would be significantly different from the response of the last one, who didn't even show up with a statement until 10 days after the revolt had been put down.
Right, indeed. You know, I would hope that it would be not just just verbal support. I think that would be sure to come, but also, you know, material support in whatever ways. Most of that would probably be covert. We wouldn't know about it, but my guess is there would be real support on the ground, too, with, you know, technology and money and so forth. And most of all, you know, this is it's sort of like the Hippocratic Oath for doctors, right? Like, do no harm. At the least, you know what we're not going to do? We're not going to make the situation worse by sending pallets of billions of dollars of cash secretly in the middle of the night to sworn enemies of the United States and of Israel. That, at the least, we're not going to do that and not, you know, do that harm. And then I think from there, in addition to that, we're also actually going to do quite a bit of good, particularly, as I said, the economic isolation of that terrible regime.
After President Trump spoke, Prime Minister of Israel Benjamin Netanyahu spoke at the UN, there could be no doubt about the strength of the bond now between the U.S. and Israel, can there?
You know, I think that's true. And, you know, what I would also point out, really kind of a corollary of that, doesn't get talked about a lot, and they can't be super public about it, but there really is an emerging bond between Israel and Saudi Arabia, if you notice, because they both have a common enemy in Iran. I think what this president realized right away, even before taking office, was that, you know, it's a complicated situation, of course, in the Middle East. But right now, the primary menace, the primary danger to the Middle East, to us, is Iran. And so the more we can isolate Iran, the more actually, interestingly, the interests of a lot of the Arab world and Israel are now actually starting to align. So groups and countries that formerly were intense adversaries are now de facto allies, even if they don't want to be public about it, you know, for a lot of reasons. And so, yes, you know, Israel is and I hope always will be our strongest ally in that region. But I also believe that Saudi Arabia, which is a country that is moderating on its own, doing a lot of good things for its people, which it needs to do, things like letting women drive, allowing entertainment for its people. So there's an opening and a moderation internally in Saudi Arabia. And then externally, I think there's, you know, an increasing friendship, certainly with us and in some ways with Israel. All of this, I think, bodes well for a much more peaceful Middle East. And, of course, we've virtually eliminated ISIS, which was a horrible threat to global peace, certainly the Middle East peace. And I think Trump, again, deserves a great deal of the credit for that swift annihilation of that awful, evil construct in the Middle East.
Well, that's what happens when you recognize a threat and a terror for what they are, as opposed to dismissing them as the JV team. So,
right.
You see him on a regular basis on CNN as political commentator. He's also a member of the Trump 2020 Reelect Advisory Committee on Twitter, @CortezSteve. Steve Cortez, thanks for being here today.
Hey, you bet. Thanks for having me.